twice.
This is Chan.
Going down, three amigos doing it once again. Well,
yes, sir.
All right. Alan, before we start, I have to play this for everyone out there. I want to set the tone for this particular show right here because a lot of y'all, I know you've seen us promoting this show tonight. We do have a special guest that we're having coming in tonight, our man Raheem Shabazz. And he has a great documentary that we want to make sure that each and every one of you guys go out there and support. Make sure you go out there and pick up this documentary. But this right here will set the tone and the mode of this particular show. Now, this is a clip right here from the actual movie documentary that Raheem did. So I want to set the tone with this. And once we get out of this right here, we're going to give you a little rundown on who our guest is tonight. And then we're going to go ahead and bring him in. But this right here is going to set the tone. This is the Black Holocaust. Check this out.
The Black Holocaust, which is taking place every day in America. You say, why do I say Black Holocaust? One out of every four black men in jail. Why do I say Black Holocaust? One out of every four black men dead in the cemetery. Why do I say Black Holocaust? Two out of every four black boys being miseducated. Only one out of every four black boys getting a high school diploma. We are living in the midst of a Holocaust against black males that encompasses five stages, from miseducation to economic castration to juvenile incarceration to psychological frustration, culminating in premature mortality in the form of extermination through homicide or through suicide. 75% of the black men who go to jail are bound to go back to jail. This is an extermination. It is not just oppression, suppression or repression. We are living in the age of black male extermination, and it's a shame that the black community isn't doing anything about it.
Now, that right there, that clip right there featured a person that we normally have on our show a whole lot as far as his clips, and that's Dr. Umar Abdul-Jabbar. Lord have mercy. But, you know, the seriousness of what we have going on in America right now with our youth, I mean, it's basically at an epidemic level, in my opinion. And I think this is something that we need to address, and I'm glad that our guest tonight made a documentary to address this. Now, just to give you a rundown on who he is, he's the owner of Rasha Entertainment. He was a contributing writer for All Hip Hop. He was also a contributing writer for The Industry Cosign, contributing writer for Next Level Magazine, Crunk Magazine, and The Industry Status Magazine. And he's also done many films, photo shoots, and many, many, many other things that the list, you know, is pretty long right here. But I'm just saying this is a well-versed man right here that we're bringing in tonight. What we're going to do right now, for all of our listeners out there, if you want to get in this conversation, because tonight, this is something that you guys need to definitely get involved in. Elementary is the beginning of a lot of, I'm a parent, so this right here is near and dear to my heart. And I guess with this documentary, Elementary Genocide from primary to penitentiary, this is very important. I want you guys to go out there, make sure you go to RashaEntertainment.com and get this documentary. But right now we're going to go ahead and bring in our guest right here. Brother Raheem, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, brother?
Nothing much, man. We're so excited to have you on tonight, man. I'm not alone tonight. I got my good friend Alan, my co-host Jen. We want to talk to you tonight about this documentary, man.
Okay, let's start it off.
Most definitely. Can I say something first? Yeah, go ahead.
That when I watched your documentary, let me tell you, I recommend this documentary for everyone. I'm a mother of a black little boy, and I wanted to get my black beret and my fish shirt, and I wanted to take to the streets and change the world after I saw your documentary. So I was definitely inspired, and I hope other people tune in and watch it and are inspired as well.
Thank you. I appreciate that, sister. It's definitely a timely message, and it needs to be told.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I just gave everybody a little rundown on who you are and some of the accolades and the things that you've done in your career. Could you let them know who you are and basically how did you get started in the industry?
Okay. You pretty much ran through my resume. A lot of this, a lot of old stuff I did from several years ago. I don't want to tell my age. But I started in this industry as a hip-hop journalist. And I pretty much written for every urban-driven magazine that there is at one time or another as a freelance writer. And I think basically that the market is changing. You know, when you're dealing with the magazine world, advertisement is the blood of the magazine. And so when everything went off online, I kind of like transitioned to my own website, Rasha Entertainment. And, you know, that's where everybody was able to find my byline. And those that was following my writing career, they just came over there with me. And filmmaking is something that I always wanted to do. And I put out a short film. I won 5 awards from that. Went on to do a feature film. Worked with Tyler Perry on 4 different films. And, you know, I figured, you know, if I can't tell the story through the written medium, then I can do it through film. Because if you let the hunter tell the story, you'll never know what happened with the lion.
That's
you
true.
Know, so we gotta tell our own story. And, you know, I shot a lot of music videos and did a lot of things like that. But I always wanted to do documentaries, and I just needed a subject matter that resonated with myself. And that one was one that I picked. And I got so many more ideas and other documentaries. And that one is called Elementary Genocide, From Primary to Penitentiary.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a sequel coming out that's going to be called Border Education versus the Board of Incarceration. And that one it goes a lot more deeper. Because as you know, Brother Kevin, you can't just give it to everybody all at once. You know what I mean? Some things take time, let it settle in, because a lot of people's going to be shocked. They're going to be like, nah, this is unbelievable. You know, how could this be true? And, you know, but everything
right.
is onto fact. You know, most of this information is readily available on Google. You just have to do your research.
So
I have a quick question. You know, we talk. We're going to get into about the men and the boys today. Any plans on addressing women? To me, you know, I had an experience this weekend where I saw, you know, black women, you know, at the doctor's office. I was thinking, you know, there is a genocide against black women. You know, with we are the leading, you know, people who have AIDS. We have AIDS and heart disease in this country. And, you know, are you going to address the sisters out there and the problems that we have and the attacks that we have upon us in this country as well?
Yes, that's definitely something that needs to be addressed. And even with this documentary, when we talk about elementary genocide, and then, you know, a lot of people, they see a cover of, on the cover, we have two very young African-American, you know, boys on there. But it also addresses the women as well, you know, because it's not just boys, it's African-American youth, you know. And on the second documentary, like I just finished interviewing a female that was sentenced to over 30 years in jail. But the judge was leaning on her because she had a 4-point grade average, first time getting in trouble. But under the sentence guidelines, she was supposed to do like 30 years.
That was the young lady. Was that the young lady in Orlando that had a little prank with the science project?
Say that again.
Was that the young lady in Orlando, Florida, that had the science project that turned into a prank?
No, this was a young lady here. Her name is Desiree Lee. And I just finished interviewing her. And, you know, we got to hear it from a woman's perspective as well, because females mm-hmm. are getting caught up in the criminal justice system. You know, the prison industrial complex does not discriminate. You know, their job is to fill bodies. And I don't think a lot of people are aware that there's a lot of companies that are invested in the prison industrial complex. For instance, Wells Fargo, Microsoft, Victoria's Secret, all of these companies have investment in the prison industrial complex, whether they invested in the stock or whether they got prisoners that are working for less than a dollar a day working on products that they sell to the consumer. And the only way... Excuse me, guys. Could I guess?
I just said, oh, wow. You know, like, in this, when you just start to discover these things, and like, how did you come to say, you know, this information was so massive, so how did you decide that you were going to do this documentary? What inspired you to touch on this subject in particular? Was it just the information was just so overwhelming about, you know, the different corporations and the system that you wanted to share with the world, rather?
Well, absolutely. The information was not only overwhelming, but from personal experience. Myself included, I found myself in trouble with the criminal justice system. When I got in trouble, I didn't even have a GED. You know, while I was, you know, locked up, I wound up acquiring a GED. I went to college. I graduated in top 10% of my class. And I got released 8 days later, you know. But had I not went to college and did what I did, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you right now. And the reason why I was able to go to college, because after I got accepted into college, I got my letter, and then the next week I got another letter telling me that the state of New York is no longer paying for college degrees for inmates, because you had inmates that were getting their doctors and their masters and things like that. So, I wind up, it was a church that was going to pay for 21 inmates college education. Uh-huh. And I was the lucky one. You know, I had to write a resume. Someone had to refer me, and I had to go through a strenuous process. And I wound up getting accepted in there, you
wow.
know. And so that's how my journalism career took off. When I came out, I started, you know, doing journalism for different magazines and different publications.
Yeah, because I do recall you, man. I think we do have a mutual friend, our good friend Charlie Braxton, and he should be calling in tonight also, man. But, I mean, with your experiences and the things that you've gone through, you know, was it hard for you to envision yourself at this point right here?
Yeah and no. You know, it was hard because when I look back, I didn't, you know, I knew I wasn't going back to jail. That
right.
that was one thing, you know. I tell people all the time that I knew I wasn't going to ever commit a crime, but I couldn't say that I wouldn't be arrested for one, because just by the virtue of me being a black man and already having a record,
yeah,
that I could just be picked up, and once they run my name, they'll say, yeah, this is him, you know, he's known for this or whatever. But I knew that I wanted to do something different. I wanted to make a change, and I really didn't know what that change was going to be until I had to make a decision. You know, do I want to work in corporate America, or do I want to work for myself? And I decided to work for myself because I was working in a financial institution, and everyone was getting laid off.
Uh-huh.
And the day that everyone got laid off, the last day of work, it was a Friday. I never forget. I was supposed to go and get my check, and I never went in. That same day, I started shooting movies, and I never looked back ever since. So from there, it became easy. You know, once I realized what I wanted to do, and I just took the initiative, and I didn't stop.
Yeah, because, I mean, you can definitely give great, great inspiration to a lot of young
mm-hmm.
guys out there. You know, because, I mean, even with the documentary.
So many guys that we do know, that I know personally, that have been, you know, in, I guess, the criminal justice system. You're lucky because in Georgia, where we are, You cannot attend a college, and you can't even do correspondence courses in our penal system here in Georgia. So many of them are in despair. So many of them, you know, think that that's the end, that that's the end. Like, what was your catalyst to say, this isn't going to define me, and I'm not going to be entrapped by this?
I had a great support system, family, friends, you know. Once I was incarcerated, that's a main component, you know. You gotta have people there, you know. You gotta know that people care. And I think the catalyst for me was, you know, I also have a son, and you know, my son kind of, you know, grew up seeing me in that predicament. And I didn't want that for him, you know, so I had to come out and make a change, and that's what I did. And there's so many other people that want to make that change, but they have to have the right direction. You know, a lot of people, like, depending on what your felony is, you can't get public assistance, you can't get housing, you're not eligible for student loans. So it's getting harder and harder for people that's incarcerated and that come out. So you have to find, but there's also, you know, there's also jobs where they don't ask you about your criminal background record. And that's something that we explore in the next documentary. You can actually work for Delta, you know, in certain positions where if you do tell them that you have a criminal record, you know, you still can get a job as long as you're honest. And there's certain states where they can't go back more than 7 years, certain states for 10 years. And I think it's in Jersey or in another state. I'm not really sure what the state is, but you can Google it. They have this thing called the Black Box, where they're not even allowed to ask you about your criminal background record, you know, during the application process. And then I guess once you're hired, you can tell them, depending on what it is, they have to keep you on the job, you know. But see, a lot of people don't know that, you know. There's people that that been incarcerated and they've been out 10, 15 years, and they think that, you know, they can't get a job because every application is going to ask you, do you have a criminal background, you know. And if they were 10 or 15 years ago, put no, you know, because they don't supposed to go back to a certain amount of years.
Now, you know what I'm saying, I want to definitely dive into the documentary. And before we do that, I see we do have a caller, and this is our good friend Charlie right here. Charlie, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
All right, we're live tonight with our brother Raheem Shabazz,
hey,
and we're talking about his documentary, Elementary Genocide, from Primary to Prison, Primary to Penitentiary. What's on your mind, Charlie?
Well, I think this is a good topic. It's a timely topic. It's certainly something I've written about when I was a commentator for BET.com. I think one of the things that we have to bring into this mix is the ever-growing prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't understand that the move spearheaded by a lot of right-wing Republicans and greedy capitalists are privatizing prisons all over the world, not just in America, but globally. And when you're privatizing these prisons, then the motivation for these prisons is not rehabilitation, it's not helping people, it's not even punishing people.
Right.
It's to make a profit. And in order to make a profit, you know, for a prison has to remain relatively full, which means at that point, when you have groups like ALEC, which are writing a lot of these laws that are causing young black men to go, and Latino men, or even poor whites, to go to jail and stay there arbitrarily. I think that's something that needs to be looked at. It needs to be challenged.
Yeah.
Even to the point of the music, I don't know whether or not, I think I told you about this, but it's interesting now that black hip-hop in particular and black music in general, but hip-hop in particular, really hip-hop, made a switch toward more gangsterism after the L.A. riots.
Charlie, I mean, that's one of the things that he did cover in this documentary, because, you know, when you get the opportunity to see it, you know, you will know that that is one of the contributing factors of our children getting put in the predicament that they're in, put in prison. And, you know, starts at a young age because, you know, the music is repetition over repetition and they hear it. But one thing
but, let me add something to that. There was a, have you seen the letter that was floating on the internet? It's kind of hard to find that letter now, but it still exists.
Yeah, I've seen that letter.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, you know, some people are saying it's almost like a Willie Lynch letter, but having been in the music business, I can tell you if you just trace the rise of gangster rap along a parallel line when they said that this meeting took place, it's a frightening parallel.
Most definitely. Charlie, what we're going to do, man, we're going to put you on hold, man. We're going to get right back at Raheem right quick, and if you got any other comments or anything, I'm going to bring you back in, all right?
Well, you all be good, man. I'll just be listening in on the internet so I can keep the Q code open.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, Charlie. Right. We miss you.
Oh, no problem. Miss you, too. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
All right.
Well,
yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, Ryan.
Kevin.
Yeah, I
want to add on to what he said. That group that he's talking about, Alex, those are the same ones that wrote the Sandra Brown law. And they was able to get that. Well, they positioned the politicians to be able to get that passed in the law by putting up money. This is a special interest group that gives these politicians money. But another thing I want to say, and it's to piggyback on what he said about these private corporations that are privatizing prisons, there's two main ones. One of them is called GEO, and another one is called CCA. These are the two leading private prisons. Now, and last year in September, they sent out a letter to 48 states. And what they were telling these 48 states is that we can take over your prison, and you don't have to run it, and you can pay us to run it at a discount cost, and as long as you guarantee that we can have a 90% occupancy for the next 20 years.
That is crazy.
You know, how can you guarantee a 90% occupancy?
When I used to belong to an organization called Families Against Mandatory Minimum, so I would hear these horrific stories about first-time offenders, people for nonviolent crimes, getting these, you know, extremely long prison sentences, you know, when cases where, you know, maybe probation or community service or some type of rehabilitation program probably would have been more effective. And, you know, this organization, Families Against Mandatory Minimums, they still exist. And, like, it has changed a little bit. But a lot of it hasn't changed. And when I saw that in your documentary about, you know, the 90%, you know, fulfillment of these prisons, I thought, what could we do? Like, what could someone do, like, in my community? What could I do? Like, how do we solve this?
Well, they have several organizations. One of them in particular, I don't remember the name of them right now, but they out of California. And it was about 3,000 students. They went and protested in front of a company that was invested in the prison. And, you know, because sometimes these people, they invest money and they don't even know what they invested in. They just know that they're getting a return on their money. But if people divest from these companies, Wells Fargo, Victoria's Secret, Microsoft, and any of those other companies, like all, every federal government, the furniture that's in there, the prisoners bill. You know, a lot of stuff that people don't believe. Like, people used to just think that prisoners do life in place. There's so many other things that they're using prison labor for, you know, and it's like 21st century slavery. And if people divest from these companies, then I think when you hurt them at your pocket, you know, that would stop all of it.
Right. It's another entity that, you know, this is Alan speaking, that I do not support anymore, and that's the Jordan brand, Michael Jordan. I don't support him because he supports private prison. And I, you know, tried to enlighten some of my cohorts about that as well, too, because a lot of my peers, you know, they buy George. And I said, like, you're giving money towards private prisons to put us in prison. And every year when new Jordans come out, who the ones that are on the TV news robbing and stealing for Jordans, who he actually funds these private prisons to put us in?
Yeah, yeah. And it's sad, it's a shame, and, you know, something needs to be done, and, you know, I'm the voice that's going to speak about it. Brothers and sisters like y'all need to speak about it. And I think that collectively, if our voices is heard and more people see the documentary and we have more community meetings and people talk about it and rally around it, a lot can be done. And that's my ultimate goal. I'm actually going to be touring the country with the documentary. I got a lot of different speaking engagements lined up. And I'm just trying to get the word out there.
You know, one of the most alarming things that I found in your documentary, I have a little boy, and he's 18 months old, and when there was a statistic that was said that, you know, it starts, the you know, miseducation starts not, you know, in third grade, but it starts in preschool, and I was horrified by this fact, you know, thinking that, you know, I have this little boy, and you know, all these things are against him from the very innocent beginning. And, you know, what do you say to mothers like me, especially single mothers out there that are raising sons? Because we talk about this all the time on the Middlemen Show about the black family dynamic and how it has changed. And you have a lot of homes now where, you know, single mothers are the head of the household and they don't have that father role to guide them, you know, a lot of times, you know, in the right direction. What do you say to those women?
If you're in a position, you know, you said you're a single mother, so I'm assuming that, you know, you're the breadwinner and you work and things like that. But if I advise people, if you're in a position, the other alternative is homeschool or sending your child to a school that has an Afrocentric education, you know, because when we say that they doomed for failure, because as soon as they get of age and they get in these schools and they start having these curriculums, you know what they teach come Columbus Day, you know what they teach come Thanksgiving. And once they're not being taught anything that's Afrocentric or something that they can relate to, this has a psychological effect on them, and it starts early. And it grows on into their teenage years. In the documentary, there's a young gentleman. His name is Devin, and he was actually in the fourth grade when I started filming him. And at that time, he wasn't doing too good in school. And you know, he was in what was supposed to be a good school because, you know, technically it was a white school in a good neighborhood. And he just wasn't, you know, getting good grades. But as soon as he went to a school where his teachers was black and everyone around him was black, they made him feel like family. And yeah, now he's an honor roll student. You know, he's in a robotic class, and he's doing exceptionally well. And he talks about that in the documentary. And actually, in documentary 2, we're going to follow back up with him and see where he's at. He wants to be a paleontologist. He taught me that word. You know, he's in the fifth grade, and it took me a while. I was like, what is that? And he broke it. It's on the documentary, paleontologist. I can't even still say it. But this white 50-year-old, you know, he was telling me, you know, now that he's in this school, he's in a robotic class, and this is where he want to be. You know, you couldn't ask me that in the fifth grade. I didn't know what I wanted to be. I wanted to turn on the TV and watch cartoons at that age.
For all those people that's out there listening right now, if you would like to get in the conversation as far as asking our guest Raheem Shabazz a question about the documentary, please dial 718-508-9972. Now, Raheem, one thing I noticed, man, you have some heavy hitters with the cast on this particular documentary. You know, Dr. Umar Johnson, you got Dr. Boyce Watkins, you know what I'm saying, Supreme Understanding. We got Killer Mike.
I mean, you have some heavy hitters and some, you know, on this documentary. What was the process of choosing the cast for this particular documentary?
You know what? It wasn't really hard at all because, you know, Umar Johnson, Dr. Umar Johnson, that's what he do. You know, he's a clinical psychiatrist. He's been speaking about this for a minute. And how I got in contact with that brother is Professor Griff from Public Enemy. I was trying to get him on there. He said, nah, brother. He said, that ain't, you know, he said, I got someone that, you know, that's a particular field. You know, and he introduced me to Umar Johnson, and we became real cool and tight, and, you know, we did it. Supreme Understanding, that's my brother, so it was easy for me to get him. Killer Mike, you know, me being in the entertainment industry, I know a lot of celebrities, and I didn't want a celebrity driven. I could have had the biggest rap star on there, but if this is not something that resonates with them, you know, or something that they're passionate about, I didn't want him on there. And the Killer Mike,
right,
you know, this is something that, you see, he brought the point home, you know, and Killer Mike is one of those rappers that is eloquent, you know, and he's for the people, and he definitely can deliver the message. And we sat down and we talked about it, and we just let the cameras roll. It was like a conversational conversation, a topic with me and him. But one thing I will tell you what was hard and disappointing, and I hope I don't run into that on the second one, is that I wanted to get inside the schools. You know, I was able to get in like two schools, but there was more schools that I wanted to get in that, you know, initially they said, yeah, you know, I sent them the clip of the documentary, and it'll be like, nah, you're not going to shoot that here. And, you know, I had teachers that reached out, and you know, after, you know, they have to get permission, and then they'll come back and be like, Raheem, I can't, you know, my job is on the line and things like that. Like, I had one teacher, and it was a charter school, and I didn't know that, you know, public money finances some of the charter school money, in addition to them doing fundraisers. And, you know, when he found out what it was about, he told me, nah, he couldn't do it because, you know, they received funding from Atlantic Public School System. And what I was asking him was, how do you feel about the latest scandal with the teachers that was cheating on the tests for these students and just passing them and not teaching them? You know, and he couldn't address that, you know what I mean? And he was like, man, you know, we're going to probably have to cut that camera off. And, you know, he asked me, could he see the questions I was going to ask him? And it's hard. And, you know, I understand, you know, I'm not trying to mess up anybody's livelihood. If that's how you earn your money, by being a teacher, I would hate for you to be on this documentary and lose your job, you know, for saying something that's truthful. You know, I just hope that while they're in the classroom that they're doing something different so that we can stop this school-to-prison pipeline.
Now, we do have a clip from the documentary, if it's okay with you, that we want to play. It's in regards to the link to prison and education. I think this is Dr. Umar Johnson that is speaking upon this. So I want to pique the interest of our listeners out there to make sure that they go and support this documentary. So we're going to play this clip, and then we're going to go right back into this conversation, all right?
Okay.
All right.
Let it go.
If you want to make sure black men become criminals, then you must systematically miseducate them, not in fourth grade, not in second grade, but beginning in preschool. In fact, many of us realize that the black boy has been miseducated by the time he reaches the fourth grade. So as a result, many of us erroneously believe that the miseducation starts in the fourth grade. I argue the opposite. The miseducation begins the first day a black boy sets foot into a preschool or a kindergarten classroom. For example, right now as we speak, less than half of all the black boys in the United States of America can read on grade level who are in the fourth grade. Right now, less than half of all fourth grade black boys in the United States of America can read on grade level. So if we know that, the question becomes, where are these boys going to be 15 years from now? Where are they going to be 10 years from now? The answer is, unfortunately, most of them are going to be in jail.
The Corrections Corporation of America CCA, Corrections Corporation of America, don't miss this, recently sent a letter to 48 U.S. governors, yours was included, announcing the Investment Initiative, a new plan to spend up to $250 million to buy prisons from state, local, and federal government entities on the conditions of a minimum commitment of 20 years for the facility, maintaining 90% capacity over the 20-year period. I'm waiting on y'all to be offended. We cannot go for that. We cannot go for that, all right? Because you know, as long as prisons are big business, as long as they are money-making ventures in capitalistic America, then guess what? You're going to have get tough on crime. You're going to have mass incarceration and what Michelle Alexander calls.
And that was a clip from Elementary Genocide, From Primary to the Penitentiary. We got our brother Raheem Shabazz on the phone with us. This is a great documentary. We advise everybody to make sure you go to RashaEntertainment.com, pick up this one. If you got a PayPal, click on the actual photo of the documentary cover and get it right now. I know a lot of y'all out there,
yeah.
Man, I web chat right now is like crazy. All right, Brother Raheem.
Yes, what's going on, brother?
And that clip right there, man, it was surprising for me to see when we watched the documentary that you had a reverend to speak about it, because even when you look at the church institution nowadays, it seems like they're more opted not to speak on it, just like you had the teachers that were somewhat scared to speak on it. What is the correlation as far as with the church, the school, and our children?
It's good that you say that, right? There is a lot of preachers that are all talking about it. I just went out Thursday to a church where they had a youth intervention, and they had someone that was there that was speaking about the school-to-prison pipeline. And I was out there filming for that. Back in the day, some of our most staunch ministers, you know, Nat Turner was a minister. You
right.
know, and they spoke about stuff that was going on in the community, you know. And there's some that's doing it, but you're not going to hear about it, you know. You're not going to hear about it. You're going to hear about T.D. Jakes. You're going to hear about Creflo Dollar. And when it comes to those that are trying to uplift and liberate the black community, unless it's a black-owned media, you're not going to hear about it.
That's
but,
true.
You know, the church is getting actively involved, you know. This is one of the biggest things that's on the radar. You know, I got a clip of President Obama where he's talking about the prison industrial complex. And whether he's going to do something about it or not, that's yet to be seen. But a lot of people are talking about it, you know. Even the rapper everybody know and love as Kanye West that's walking around here wearing a Confederate flag like he ain't got no sense. He talks about that on the prison industrial complex on that song, The New Slave.
Right.
You know, J. Cole addressed it in his song, Cook a Smile. So, you know, I think right now it's a timely message, and rappers from politicians, everybody is talking about it. Now it's just a plan and a course of action that has to be taken so that we can eradicate this.
Most definitely. Now, when we look at the school system, and in the movie, in the documentary itself, there was a particular part in there where they were talking about the oppressor teaching the oppressed. And I know in our conversation a few minutes ago, we were saying if you had a school that was, you know, predominantly black or had black teachers, male teachers, black male teachers, it would be better for our children. Could you speak on, you know, the reason why, you know, it's best for our children to be taught by people that look like them?
Self-esteem, you know, it doesn't resonate with a child if you tell them that they come from African queens and kings and queens and that we was the father of medicine from a person that is not melanated.
Right.
And another thing is, you know, if you look at the public school system, African-American youth are being suspended 3 times more than white, their counterparts.
True.
And they're being suspended, and they're being sent to the, instead of the principal's office, you have a police officer, and they're being arrested for misdemeanors and minor infractions. And, you know, statistics tells you that those that are arrested in school are 2 times more to drop out of school and 3 times more likely to end up in the prison system. You know, anything from chewing gum loudly in class and different things like that, you're bound to go to school for. I mean, you're bound to go to jail for while you're in school. We just had a young man, I think it was in Texas, it was on the news, where they just arrested him for turning a library book late. You know, he held on to a GED library book for 3 years, and they sent that man to jail. At a time when we're trying to get our youth to read, and we tell them reading is fundamental, this man got a record because he held on to the library book for too long. Now, 3 years is a long time, but maybe it took him 3 years to get to learn arithmetic and mathematics, and, you know, but it just goes to show you, you know, it never was like that, and there's a reason why it's like that now is because the 48 states that we talked about is trying to maintain a 90% occupancy rate in those prisons. Because when those prisons was filled, prison, for those that don't know, it's like a world of its own. You got doctors in there, you got cooks, you know, anything that's going on in society, you got police union, correction officers union, and different things like that. They said that if under the mandatory minimum and the sentencing guidelines, that if they were to let 1 million inmates out early or give them a reduced sentence, that it would be almost like $50 billion lost in a year. So just think about the loss of letting those inmates out earlier that are first-time felony offenders and that got low, nonviolent crimes.
Wow. I hope everybody that's listening right now is paying attention to what this brother is saying, because you may have a nephew, you have a brother, you know what I'm saying, you have cousins or whatever the case may be. These are the things that you need to pay attention to, because in my opinion, it's a plan. It might not even have to be my opinion. You see it in fruition right now. It's out there. It's right there in front of your face, and it starts at an early age.
Now, for those kids that it starts at such an early age, you know, a lot of the kids don't have, you know, an Afrocentric school, or even parents that have knowledge of, you know, I guess, Kemetic Empire or the Kush Empire or who we are as a people. And to those kids, their heroes aren't, people that, you know, are leaders. They're people like Lil Wayne. In your documentary, you spoke of, you know, there was someone who spoke of Lil Wayne and how they compared Lil Wayne to Malcolm Little before he was Malcolm X, and how, you know, this person has this negative, you know, influence on our youth. You know, what do you think about, you know, how do we change that in the music industry, and what influences our children? So hip-hop is such, you know, a part of their lives, their world. How do we infiltrate that and change that?
Well, there's an ongoing struggle right now to have those that are rapping about socially conscious, you know, lyrics, for them to be more prevalent and to be on radio and different things like that. And I think with the internet, you know, you don't have to go to traditional radio. If traditional radio is not playing it, you can always find it on the internet. And I think, you know, we got to change our mindset of what we want to hear as a people. You know, I'm not going to lie, some of the stuff I like to hear, but some of the stuff is just like it's too redundant, you know. You know, when I was growing up, there always was, you know, you had gangster music, you had conscious rap, but now you don't have that. You know, ain't no one talking about fight the power. you know, and if they is, you're not hearing them on the radio.
Matter
you
of
know?
Fact,
so
if you remember back in the day, even after a certain period of time, you did not hear certain records. Now you can hear it all throughout the day.
That's true.
Which
That's
is crazy.
True. You know what? Let me say something, right? T.I. did an interview, and you can go up on the internet and look this up, right? You know, he's no longer with Atlantic Records. He's a free agent.
Right.
And one of the things that they told him, they didn't want him to do that Family Hustle thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
They said that it would mess up his image, and they like to thug out T.I. and that, you know, the family image thing is making him appear to be soft. And those are his words out of his mouth that a white executive over at Atlantic Records said that. You know what I mean? Here it is, you know, a rapper that's showing his real side of himself as being a father, a married man, and being actively involved in his kids' life, and they were telling him that that's hurting his image and it's making him soft. You know, and he was like, yo, he liked the new image that he had. You know what I mean?
Right.
And this is the whole reality show was. So, you know what I mean? And despite what he may rap about, you know what I mean? It's supposed to be just music. It's supposed to be just entertainment. You know what I mean? But these record labels want people to really, you know, believe this is how you live and this is how you're supposed to live when that ain't the reality of it. You know? And it's
a key word. And the key word in what you said, well, what T.I. said as far as who told him that, it was a white male. They
yeah.
don't know where we come from. Like, T.I. has came from that, but T.I. is not living that lifestyle no more. T.I. kids are not living that lifestyle. T.I. kids will never live that lifestyle because of what he is trying to instill in them. So the things that they are trying to promote is what that so-called letter that was floating around is continuing to promote is the destruction of the black people.
Very true.
Yeah.
If you're just tuning in, we are talking with Raheem Shabazz, director of Elementary Genocides from Primary to Penitentiary. One thing I want to get into, and if you guys would like to get in and have a question about this documentary or how you can get it, dial 718-508-9972. One thing I want to get into, and Alan kind of spoke about it as far as a cycle. As he spoke with T.I. and his children, they will never repeat the same cycle that he had to grow up with. So, I mean, in the documentary, you have someone speak about the cycle and how we can end this cycle. Could you talk a little bit about, you know, what we can do as a people to end this cycle and you know what I'm saying, what are some of the processes that we need to make sure we take the steps to end it?
I think one of the main things is that we shouldn't rely on the government to do it for us. You
sure.
know, it would be a good thing that, you know, with the sentencing guidelines, that be restructured and changed and different things like that. But at the end of the day, we need to stop going to jail, you know. And then also, we need to start teaching our kids from a young age, you know. When they come home, you know, it's not always let them be in front of the TV, the video game, and just the things like that. You know, make them read a book a week.
Right.
You know, it starts at home. You know, school doesn't end just because the bell rings. You know, when they come home, you know, give them book assignments. You know, let them read books that they can resonate with. You know, African themed books that have stories that talk to them, to their heart, to their spirit. Not about Christopher Columbus, you know. And if you tell your kids don't lie, and then you having them reading a book about Christopher Columbus, that's the biggest lie. So, you know, we just as parents, we got to be able to teach our kids. And I tell everybody all the time, you know, we the holders and keepers of ourselves and our responsibility. So at the end of the day, it's on us. And I think that is. If each individual do that, we'd be in a better position.
Now, the one thing the brother was speaking on in the documentary also was saying that we have to have people around us that know better and basically speaking up to say, hey, you don't have to be the way that your mother or your father or your cousins or your brothers, you know, be. Because, I mean, if like he was saying, if you see three members of your family go to prison, you're opted to think that that is life and that's the way it's supposed to be. So, I mean, that's one thing that we definitely speak about on the Middleman Talk Show. You know, we love our people, and we want to see our people do well. And you know, we're trying to reinforce that thought process of your destiny is not determined by your surroundings at all times. You know, we love to say products of our environment. I know a lot of people that ain't the product of their environment. They made their own environment what they wanted to be by being positive. Now,
right.
I think that your documentary was an inspiration for, you know, a lot of people aren't knowledgeable of these things that are happening in their community, in their world. And as you educate your children, educate yourselves. And I think that that's what I came away from your documentary, that, you know, continue to educate yourself about your community, about who you are, and the type of person that you want to reflect upon your community and your children to be. You know, that's what you should strive for. And that's the feeling that I came away from your documentary. It's very powerful. And, you know, again, like Kevin said, all our listeners out there, I think especially to mothers, and I'm speaking to the ladies now, if you have a son or, you know, you love a little boy, a little black boy, and you're a little girl too, you know, you have a child, this is a must that you have to see this. It's a necessity.
Most definitely. Jim, right now we do have a caller that would like to speak with Raheem. This is my man, Messiah. What's up, Messiah? You live with the Middleman and Raheem Shabazz.
Peace, Kevin. Good to speak to you, brother.
Most definitely.
I just wanted to, you know, salute the brother Raheem Shabazz on his efforts, everything he's involved with, the things that he's saying. Of course, Kevin, as you know me for years.
Yeah.
Here are a lot of my thoughts, and the things he's saying excite and electrify me when I hear him speaking on the accountability that we need to take for the children, when I hear him speaking on putting things into motion, such as when you come home, instead of that video game, you will do a written report, you will read, you will research. These are definitely, all I'm doing is affirming that these are definitely all the things we need to be focused on, accountability and a conscious collective effort to take responsibility for the actions that we're portraying that our children are reflecting.
Most definitely, man. Raheem, did you get all that, my brother?
Yes, I did. And you're right. You know, reading is fundamental. We got to read to our kids. We got to teach them. We got to empower them. And we got to move this generation forward. And Dr. Torrance Stevens, he said in the documentary, with a credit card, you had debt. But with a library card, you'll forever be rich. So those
right,
that
sure.
got library cards, y'all need to get in those public libraries and get a book. You know, and what's ironic, we're talking about, you know, black teachers. It was a white teacher. I think I was in probably the 6th or 7th grade, and she gave me a book, Man, Child, and the Promised Land. And we had to read that book, you know what I mean? And from there, that's when I knew I wanted to be a writer. But there's
right.
books out there. You just got you. If you read enough, you'll read a book that will spark a change in you. You know,
definitely.
and that was a change in me. I wanted to be a writer. You know, and by being a writer, you can visit different places, use your imagination, and you can see the world over. You know, the
definitely.
World is not confined to where you live at, what in economical status you may be in. You know, and that's why reading is so important. It opens the minds of our youth, and I employ everybody, man, to read to their
definitely.
Kids. Read,
and
read.
If I may interject, just to bear witness to the empowerment of reading, I myself come from what they would consider a statistical environment. I was born and raised in Chicago to a mother who was on drugs, and that came with everything you would expect. That came with relying on government programs and funding. That came with schools that had Neanderthalic textbooks and teachers with no desire to teach the children. That came with the only men in the environment being hustlers and pimps and gangsters. And being an avid reader empowered me to the position where even through all of these hurdles, people had the assumption that somehow I came from somewhere else. that I was from an educated background, that I went to school, that I went to college. We're talking about somebody who got a GED in jail, and the only reason I did it then is because you got to leave the block and travel down the hall and go to another block. But because of my dedication to reading in my own personal life, you know, long before I ever went to college, people had the assumption that I was college educated, and reading made me know that I could, you know, be whoever or whatever I wanted to be, and it took me to places, as you were saying, in time and time past and present around the world, that even though I couldn't get there physically, reading it, that connection with that mental collective really put me in these places, and I was able to walk away with the experiences from every book that I read as if they were my own. So that's important to point out too, I think.
Most definitely. Man, Messiah, man, we appreciate you for calling in and showing love to the brother Raheem Shabazz, man. Hey, tell the people to keep tuning in, download the show, man.
Yes, sir.
Most definitely. Thank
you. Hey, Kevin.
Yes. Yeah.
Kevin, I gotta walk into this function, and
yeah,
it's
gonna
be a lot.
Thank you, man. I know you're about busy right now, man, and we appreciate you for taking your time tonight, man. And we're gonna make sure we keep supporting this documentary, man. I'll be talking with you later, my brother. We thank you very much.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Okay, this is another thing before I go. Right, I have a premiere here in Atlanta. And what I want to do is I want to invite you guys out. I want to give y'all tickets to it and probably, you know, give a couple of tickets online. You know, you can give out to some of the listeners.
Okay.
I actually don't have a date right now. I was looking at January 6th. If not the 6th, I may do it Martin Luther King weekend. I'm not really sure. But as soon as I find out, I'm definitely going to let you know. And maybe we'll do some type of raffle. In addition to giving tickets, we'll give some of your listeners, readers. See, I'm all about readers.
Yeah.
You hear me? I'm the readers. I'm all about readers. But we'll give some of them documentary. You know what I mean? Maybe we do something where they can answer a question or something like that. But I just want to get the word out there. I thank everybody for tuning in, for listening, and God bless.
Most definitely, man. We appreciate you. And that was Brother Raheem Shabazz, Elementary Genocide from Primary Communication. Make sure y'all go get that documentary. Support this brother right here. We've seen it. I'm inspired by it. As my co-host said, we definitely, Al and Jen, we love what you do, my brother. You stay strong, and we definitely will be supporting you.
All right, one more thing, Ron. I want to give a shout-out, man. I got to give the shout-out, man. I want to give a shout-out to my man, Goss, from Oh My God's Productions. He's one of the producers on the documentary, and whenever I called on him, man, he didn't have no problem coming out and helping me on it, you know, from the earliest stages of it. He's seen it from script to screen, so I definitely have to give him a shout-out. So y'all stay blessed.
All right, you too, my brother. Thank you very much.
All right, peace.
Right. And that was Raheem Shabazz, director of the Elementary Genocide from Primary to Penitentiary. And man, I'm telling you, man, I'm so inspired by it. I don't know what to tell our listeners out there as far as going to get this documentary, because I'm telling you, it is very, very crucial, very important.
As a parent, I think it's crucial. As a parent of an African American child, I think it's crucial to watch this documentary. I think it's crucial to be conscious of what's happening in our communities across the country. I think that it's a blessing that, you know, we've had the opportunity to view it, and I want other people to have the opportunity too, because it's real. You know, like I said to him in the first beginning, of to all our listeners, if you weren't tuning in before, when I first thought, like, I wanted to put on my black beret, get my fist up, and hit the streets, because, you know, it terrified me, because I do have a son, and I know a lot of mothers and fathers out here that have children want to arm themselves with as much knowledge they can so their children do not become victims of a systematic society out to destroy them.
Most definitely. I mean, once again, Rasha Entertainment is Rasha Entertainment.com. RashaEntertainment.com. Make sure, as soon as you get on that link right there, you will definitely see where you can pre-order it, and you can go ahead and get that documentary.
I forgot to ask him, but I think the release date actually is in 2014. But you know what I'm saying? You can get a pre-order in. Make sure you watch it, because I'm going to tell you, I showed it to my son. I asked him, did he learn anything? He was like, yes. Because this information that he shared and that is shared by the individuals that's on this documentary is detrimental to you parents out there to know what's going on. I'm telling you, this ain't us trying to sell you nothing. This ain't us trying to overhype anything. We're trying to express to you guys, make sure you go get this documentary. I'm telling you, if you believe in us, and you know we got a lot of people that's been supporting us and believe what we say, we telling you, mark our words. If we wrong, you come back and tell us we wrong. I fess up for it, but I'm gonna tell you, we ain't wrong. Alan.
I think that.
Okay.
What's up, Alan?
Man, I just want to say, man, this was a great show today. I think that all our listeners who listened to the show was enlightened on the information that was provided. The movie would definitely enlighten you a little bit more on a lot of things. I was definitely enlightened. When I watched the movie, it was a lot of statistics that I didn't know about myself that really enlightened me that I'm going to spread the word about. I mean, because it needs to be known, and a lot of people don't know this stuff.
Most definitely. Jen, go ahead.
I was just going to, you know, bounce off what Alan said. You know, the documentary talks a lot about, you know, the new slavery. And, like, we every day when you leave the house and you give your money and you put your money into your state, into corporations, into products, into things that, you know, help the enslavement of our people, you have to be conscious of that so you can stop that. And by stopping it is stopping it with your money. And I think that, you know, you'll find that this documentary is empowering because it will give you a little bit more information about how to help. Because, like, a lot of times you feel helpless, like, well, what can I do? What, you know, this is so big, it's beyond me, and it's not beyond you. It's doing the little things, you know, getting your kids a library card. Stop, like Alan said, stop buying Jordan. Stop, you know, stop participating in things that are destroying our people. And, you know, you'll walk away empowered.
Most definitely. And if you don't know, don't be afraid to ask somebody, because everybody start off with, you know what I'm saying, the understanding of what they understand. But to increase that knowledge, you have to participate in it to make sure you can increase that knowledge. So once again, we would like to thank everybody that took the time to listen to us tonight. We did talk about the elementary genocide from primary to penitentiary, the documentary that our brother Raheem Shabazz did. Make sure you go out there and support that. That's Rasha Entertainment, rashaentertainment.com, rashaentertainment.com. If you're a friend with us on Facebook, you can go ahead and click on the Middleman Talk Show Facebook page. We got it plastered everywhere. If you're one of my friends on Facebook, I'm sorry. But, yes, I blast your page with that poster that we had on there all day today. And yesterday. So, once again, I appreciate you guys. Thank you. If you got any questions, comments, or anything like that, hit us up at wearethemiddleman@gmail.com. Also, we're in the runnings for Slept On Radio Personalities of the Year. So, make sure you go vote for us at SouthernEntertainmentAwards.com. And we will appreciate you guys if we win, because it's all about you guys also. Thank you very much, and we appreciate it. We out.
All right, tune in next week.
The middleman shouted, Big Crit shouted. Yeah. Now, I ain't sure what you was tuning in to, but pay attention to the real talk. What we here for, so take a listen time out. Take a minute. Shout in and learn some. Put your mind to grind the world. You destined to earn some. Linda, yeah. Comment on what you hear. Let's figure out this master plan to put this thing in gear. Don't matter if you hood or you corporate. Don't get you got a will to do way better than you were doing. Well, then you fortunate. Take a stand. Stop complaining about what you ain't got. Hating on the next man because he was dying to wreck shop. Every Sunday, tune in. Go live 6 p.m. blogtalkradio.com. The middle me. Hey. What's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening, the middleman? Hey, what's happening? BlogTalkRadio.com.